Jashodanandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Jamuna Tira Banachari. Jamuna Tira Banachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Kunjabihari.
Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivraja Kacharya Ashto Tarashata Shishimad His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivraja Kacharya Ashto Tarashata Shishimad His Divine Grace Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada ki. Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda ki. Iskon Fonder Acharya Srila Prabhupada ki. Garantara Shimam Bhagavatam ki. Itai Goura Premanandi. Oh glories to the assembled devotees. Oh glories to the assembled devotees. Oh glories to the assembled devotees. Oh, glory to Shishiguru and Shigauranga.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, entitled The Summon Bonon, Chapter 6, entitled The Killing of the Demon Putana, text number 30 and 31.
Sri Suka Uvacha Iti Pranaya Bhadbhad Iti pranaya baddhabhir gopi bhikrita rakshanam pajajitva stanan mata sanyeve shajat atmajam. Sri Suka Uvacha Iti Pranaya Batbahir Iti Pranaya Bat Iti Pranaya Bat Dhabir Gopi Bhikrita Rakshanam Pajajitva Stanam Mata Sanyavesha Yat Atmajam. Sri Suka Uvacha Iti Pranaya Baddhabhir Gopi Bhikrita Rakshanam Pajajitva Stanam Mata Sanyave Sajat Atmajam.
Please chant.
Pranaya Vadhabhir Gopi Bhikrita Rakshanam Pajajitvastanan mata Sanyaveshayat atmanam Sri Sukha Uvacha Iti pranaya baddhabhir Gopi bhikrita rakshanam Pajajitvastanan mata Sanyaveshayat atmanam Iti pranaya baddhavir Gopi bikrita rakshanam Pajajitvastanan mata Samyavesayat atmanam Sri Sukha Uvacha. Sri Sukadev Goswami said, Iti, in this way, Pranaya Paddhabihi, who were bound with maternal affection, Gopibihi, by the elderly gopis, headed by Mother Yasoda, Krita Rakshanam. All measures were taken to protect the child. Pajajitva. And after that, feeding the child. Stanam, the nipple. Mata, Mother Yasoda. Sanyaveshayat, made to lie down on the bed. Atmajam, her son. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Srila Sukadev Goswami continued, all the gopis, headed by Mother Yashoda, were bound by maternal affection. After they thus chanted mantras to protect the child, Mother Yashoda gave the child the nipple of her breast to suck and then got him to lie down on his bed. Purport. When a baby drinks milk from the breast of his mother, this is a good sign of health. So the elderly gopis were not satisfied with chanting mantras to give protection to Krishna. They also tested whether their child's health was in order. When the child sucked the breast, this confirmed that he was healthy. And when the gopis were fully satisfied, they had the child lie down on his bed. Text number 31. Tavananda yajo gopa matura jabrajangata bilokya putana deham badubhur atibishmita. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Meanwhile, all the cowherd men headed by Nanda Maharaj returned from Mathura, and when they saw on the way the gigantic body of Putana lying dead, they were struck with great wonder. Purport. Nanda Maharaj wonder may be understood in various ways. First of all, the cowherd man had never seen such a gigantic body in Vrindavan, and therefore they were struck with wonder. Then they began to consider where such a body had come from, whether it had dropped from the sky, or whether by some mistake or by the power of some mystic yogini, they had come to a place other than Vrindavan, They could not actually guess what had happened, and they were struck with wonder. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Ummilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Uttare Srimate Ramaswami. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Uttare Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine. Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvesheta Srinavadi Pasatyade Siparine. Bancha kalpa tarubya sha kripa sindu via eva cha patitanam pavanevyo vaishnavevyo namo namaha. All the gopis headed by Mother Yasoda were bound by maternal affection. The importance for a healthy society of the presence of the mother is being highlighted here. In fact, throughout the whole Vedic scriptures, the position of a mother is glorified. Families are the heart of society. It's the essential part of society. It's what makes a society. So, when the social body is healthy and in harmony with the directions of the personality of Godhead, or in harmony with religious principles, then families are very strong and stable. Everybody is performing their part and their religious duties. So everybody's, the whole social body, all the elements that actually forms the social body are perfectly protected and perfectly engaged according to their nature. And so it's very harmonious and it's healthy. So at the center of a healthy society is a healthy family. And at the center of a healthy family is the importance of the presence of the mother. The mother is the almost like the pivotal character that balance the whole family, because it's the mother the one who nourish the family. In fact, it is explained that the purpose of family is to beget children. So grihastha ashram means to bring up children. And these children are properly trained to be to carry on the religious principles that are given in society. So for the children, which is the purpose of family life, the first guru is the mother. The mother not only instruct the children and properly guide the children and protect the children,
but the mother nourishes the children. Highlighted here is the feeding, the breastfeeding, the milk feeding from the breast of the mother. What an important element that is. In the science of the Ayurveda, it is explained that it's not only the most nourishing substance that the child can take, the milk of the breast of the mother, because it's immediately perfectly consumed by the children, by the child. But he also does something that he starts to create in the child the psychophysical, not only the physical, it's not only nourish the physical, but it nourish also the emotional and the mental balance of the child. Because there is a very special connection when this activity of the child sucking the breast of the mother that creates, you know, that bond, and it makes a very healthy child, again, not only physical but also emotionally. So in the Burpur, Prabhupada explains that when the child sucks the breast of the mother, is a sign of good health. Of course, this is in the perfect Vedic society, when every personality in that is part of the social structure is perfectly protected. The brahmanas instruct, qualified brahmanas give the guidance, qualified kshatriyas, they protect all the citizens by making sure that all the facilities and everybody is following the religious principles. The families, the head of the families protect the woman, the children, and the elderly. The animals are properly protected, especially the cows. So everybody is perfectly protected. So Arjuna, in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, he brought out this argument. If all these kings are going to be killed in this battlefield, what is going to happen to society? When there is no protection, then when the kings are not there, then society are going to stop following religious principles. When there is a stoppage of following religious principles, then the woman, the children, the elderly, the animals, the cows, the brahmanas, they won't be protected. When the women are not protected, in other words, that their facility to perform this most important and pivotal service or work, which is, you know, to brought up to give birth and to bring up a child. When that is not properly protected, then what happened? What did Arjuna say? What is the result of that? He say Varna Shankara. Remember that. Varna Shankara means unwanted population. Means that the children grow on with all kinds of not only physical, emotional, and all
all kinds of difficulties, not very healthy. Some of us who grew up in Kali Yuga with the dysfunctionalities of Kali Yuga from family perspective, we have to deal with all kinds of emotional obstacles because of this type of thing. So in Kali Yuga, everything is upside down because there is no proper following of religious principles in society, and there is no facility and guidance for the people of society to be able to properly follow and understand the importance and the glories and you know the essential aspects of the work that is provide that one have to do according to one's nature to have a healthy life, a healthy family, a healthy society. So without that guidance, one cannot appreciate and properly understand that. So everything is upside down. So we have situations in which now when children take birth, they immediately taking away from the mother. So that those moments in which, according to Ayurveda, you know, the children have to immediately be in the bosom of the mother, the child, they have taken birth. So to separate the child at that moment, it creates, again, some, it doesn't allow the proper bond to take place. And then instead of being fed by the milk of the mother, now children are fed with formulas, right? And then what to speak of that the work or the importance of being a mother is being challenged or is conflicting with the education that all of us receive, men and women, to actually be competitive in this world and to try to that, you know, the most important thing that we can do is about what is a personal interest. So in other words, the individual pursuits are the ones that rule in society, in this modern society. In Vedic society, duties, social duties, family duties, rules. The individual pursuits were second to the community, the family duties. So right now everything is upside down. And then what happened is that at the end we see that some children are being killed by their own mother by abortions, and you rationalize it by, you know, well, we don't see it. There's a child within the womb. You don't see a baby crying. So you rationalize is something else. Still, it's not a child. And you rationalize that, well, you know, why giving that child a difficult life when the fact is that I'm not ready to actually give it? You know, there's all kinds of rational that women give. This is, or at least this mentality of this called the pro-choice thing. It's a very hot topic nowadays in this society. So I have the right to choose if I can bring up a child or not. So in other words, that shows that the position of being a mother is not necessarily very much understood and or at least the pivotal importance of the mother, of the work of a mother that performs all this, you know, this is basically dedicated to the welfare, the protection, and the bring up the child, is something that is not properly understood in society. We're living in a society that is very focused on selfishness and very self-centered on the individuals. So it's about, and it's incredible when you actually see deep, analyze deep the modern society, how because of this selfishness, individuals are willing to sacrifice even the life of their children. Like that. And it's shocking when you analyze it, you know, deeply. This is not the case that is presented in the narrations of the Srimad Bhagavatam, when there is not only the dedication of these ideal mothers like Mother Yasoda, Mother Rohini, and the gopis of Vrindavan. That the whole, they're so dedicated to the protection and the welfare of the child that that's what created, you know, this wonderful society in which, you know, even simple peasant ladies, they were very well acquainted with you know, Vedic culture, Brahminical culture, very cultured people. And you can see, you can, in the narrations, you can understand the strong community that was there when it's talked that, you know, it takes a village to raise a child. Right here you see it, how all the elder gopis were also part of raising a child, the child of Mother Yasoda, Lord Krishna. So it's an ideal society. It's a society that focuses on the protection. Prabhupada also wanted us to see this importance. He called the children that actually take birth in this society, a Krishna conscious society, he called them Vaikuntha children. He said they're very precious. So we have a great service. To bring up these Vaikuntha children is possibly, arguably, the most important service that we can actually do. To the point that Prabhupada tells
his female disciples when they become mothers that now your deity worship is child worship. You can stop everything. Even to the point if you actually compromise in even chanting your rounds, there's instances like that. It's so pivotal because these are, you know, very special pious souls that have taken birth in this movement. They have to be, you know, carefully brought out. Because of the influence of Kali Yuga, we haven't been successful, to say it, you know, nicely, you know, to say it gently, in this most important task. But we have to, it's like everything that we, you know, trying to do individually and collectively, we have to come to fulfill those important services. We have to be very attentive. So especially ISKCON now is catching after so many mistakes. Then for many years we've been developing, you know, a child protection office. And in the child protection office, we see that the children that actually come to our temple are properly looked after. There are so many dangers in there. And people, in one sense, they're sometimes naive and trustful. So our duty as devotees, aspiring, being trained as brahmanas, is to guide and temple administrators is to provide protection, especially to the children. Especially to the children. Because that is going to guarantee a healthy, strong society. Prabhupada's second, you know, Prabhupada, how you say, half of his mission that he left for us to fulfill is to establish this social order. His Holiness Rupa Goswami organized some couple of years ago a retreat in Gita Nagari focused on Vanashram. And possibly the most striking presentation was made by a devotee. His name is Kunteya Prabhu. And he basically say, without taking care of the children, forget about all that. There's no way. Basically, he focused the whole basis of establishing Vanashram Dharma is establishing a strong children education and protection. So it's important that us individually and a society, we understand how pivotal this is, how we can encourage our devotees, both, you know, Grihastha devotees, to understand how important this aspect is and how each one of the members of the Grihastha, the man, has a particular nature and a particular part to play in a healthy family. The woman has a particular nature and a particular part to play. And when that's understood very well,
then you can create this very healthy family. The man by nature provides protection. It's just by nature. You know, they want to provide. So when the child see the father, that it feels secure. You look at the father and you feel secure. You feel that you're gonna be protected. That's a feeling that is required for a healthy child to grow. That you are protected. The mother provides nourishment, provides all the emotional, the connection with the world, the connection with people, the bonding. That's what the mother provides, is nourishing. So when this is understood, then you have a healthy child, you have a healthy family. When there is healthy families, then you have healthy society, strong society. So it's something that there is very dedicated devotees that are working hard to actually bring these understandings into our society, that unfortunately it is afflicted by the influence of Kali Yuga. Out there is the opposite. Both fathers and mothers, they have no clue at best. Even with the best intentions, they have no clue on how to. So because everything is so self-centered and so selfish, then most people, at least I can tell for myself, I grew up completely messed up, and my parents, beautiful people. My mother already, you know, she left this world. Beautiful people. I mean, I love them, you know. But they messed me up, me and my brothers. You know? They didn't have a clue. So I'm still dealing with emotional wounds. I'm still dealing with that. I'm 57 years old. I'm still dealing with that stuff. Because it's so messed up. And these are really, you know, nice people. Loving. My mother was a very loving mother. My father is, you know, I mean, is, in, you know, really, really nice guy. Very supportive, you know, like that. What to speak of abusive parents that are out there. You know, what do they do to the poor child? How this poor child will grow with, you know, parents that are abusive and neglectful. So this is what is out there. And unfortunately sort of seeps sometimes into our society. And we have to grow that. Individually, we have to prepare. We have to understand. Most of us are going to enter the Grihastha ashram. Most of us are already in the Grihastha ashram. So we have to understand how important it is to give this protection to the child. To make sure that, you know, we are there. Somehow or other, that the child can see that both parts are there. The mothers have been mothers, the fathers have been fathers. Or at least, you know, circumstantially, you know, especially in India, there is the extended family that helps. you know, in India, there's still there's still connections to this Vedic, you know, order in which family rules. So the elder, the elders of the family, they also take part in giving the child the nourishment that he needs. But we have to make sure, we have to be responsible with this. It's very important. Anyway, because we, my wife and I, we work with children for so many years. This is a topic that is important for us. And so it's close to our heart. And that's why I took it, you know, it's sort of, I took that part and discussed it a little bit. Any comments or questions? Jai Baladev.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for your class. You made a lot of wonderful points. One of the points you made were selfishness. My comment and question related to that, or at least this is a comment. Usually when we're selfish, sometimes we think I'm hurting others, but in the end we're hurting ourselves, because we can see there's so many examples throughout history that a politician will ascend to power by convincing the voters that I'm your protector, but then less than a year later they descend from power because they couldn't protect themselves from greed, from lust, from anger, criticizing others, and then are removed from power. And that's kind of our situation. So there's a quote by Aristotle that I really like in this regard, that in the end, you know, when we're selfish, it may or may not hurt others depending on the quality of their character, but it always hurts us. Mm. He says, the wicked man cannot be in the position of a friend, even toward himself, because he has nothing in himself which can incite the sentiment of friendship. It is man's duty to flee from wickedness with all his might and strive to be good. And thus may he come to be a friend to himself and may come to be a friend to another. And so my question is really related to the other point you were mentioning, that sometimes we, a man has the natural propensity to be a protector, and a child looks at the father as a protector, the wife, etc. Well, one thing that came to mind is what Krishna says in the Gita, Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo Mati Sarvam Pravartate Iti Matua Bhajate Ma Buddha Bhava Samavitaha. I am the source, power source of everything, and those who are wise worship me with all their hearts. So we see that a computer is attractive to the degree it's connected to its power source, and unattractive to the degree it is disconnected from the power source. So my question is related to the fact, what are some steps we can move to gain the realization, or faith at least, that Krishna is the only power source? Because the tendency is that when you consider your father the power source, or your husband the power source, then when he divorces you, not only does he leave, but your Krishna consciousness also leave, because you consider him the power source. Or any relationship, when someone betrays us, as far as a Krishna conscious relationship is concerned, we give too much credit to people that they're Krishna, the power source, and then when they leave, our Krishna consciousness leaves. So what are some steps we can move forward to maintain the fact that in the end, that everyone's power source or so-called power source in this world is going to be taken either through the death of the body or the death of the character. So what are some steps we can maintain the faith that actually Krishna is my power source, and regardless of whether people betray me or this goes, that goes, I can still maintain my Krishna consciousness, because that's the most important thing.
Yeah. I first pass a comment on the comment, and then I ask the answer the question, as, you know, with whatever realization, limited realization I have. One thing is sometimes when people are self-centered, I mean, many times, they're so oblivious to others. That's when you're self-centered, that you don't even realize the damage that you're doing to others. And for sure, what you say is very accurate, that at the end, you're killing yourself. I mean, you basically putting yourself in hell, you know, in this lifetime and in the next lifetime. Just at times, you know, when one is so unconscious of the harm that you cause by your self-center, which is selfishness. So when we're devotees, we learn to be conscious, you know. And as we become purified, we become more and more conscious. So the devotees, that's why the devotees, you know, are free. You're becoming free from that spiral down to hell. That people that are selfish, you know, going. Sadly, it's like that. To live a progressive life in which you're actually going up in consciousness, you have to understand religious principles. So you have to have guidance from higher authority. So that's a comment on the comment, you know? That in general, self-centered, selfish people, they have no capacity to see the harm that they're causing. They don't see it. They rationalize it and don't see it. Incredible. It is like that. You know. Sometimes as devotees we've caught ourselves being unconscious. But the beautiful thing is that Krishna is very kind because we're sincerely trying, all of us. Krishna shows. You know, you get caught in a conflict, there's a community, and then you become a little self-conscious, and then you start to question yourself sometimes, and then, you know, you come to conclusion, well, maybe I have to be a little more, you know, I have to be more humble, etc., etc. You get like that. So that's progressive, because we're trying, we're being guided. So that's that. In terms of the question of what can we do to not see someone or see someone as our, the source of our protection, and depend on that someone that is not Krishna. For us adults, and especially devotees, we have to always understand that those who are providing protection to us are, you know, tools or agents of Krishna's protection. But it's Krishna's protection. But as far as a child doesn't understand. For the child, the mother and the father are God. A child doesn't have, you know, that's why it's so pivotal. When you have a mother that neglects a child, and when you have a father that neglects a child or abuse them, then what is the child position? They see this, it's God. But for us, it's different as an adult, you know, and especially as a devotee. For example, the situation that can happen in our society, because it has happened many times, our spiritual master fall down. We see how that breaks devotees. I witnessed many times, and maybe some of you know some people like that. But I did know a lot of people, because I was during the time of the Sonal Acharya collapse. I was, you know, a devotee at that time. So I saw the devastation that it caused. But I mentioned it before, the approach that Devaki Mataji had, she got her first spiritual master fell down. Then she took shelter of another one, fell down. Then another one fell down 3 times. I mean, you say that 3 times, you're striked out, you're finished. The fourth one, she's find shelter. And her understanding is remarkably mature. She said that each of those spiritual masters, when they were well situated, they gave her exactly what it was needed. And she, focusing on that, as she appreciated that. Why? Because she's seeing Krishna and Srila Prabhupada, who are actually providing that protection. So, you know, so it's a more mature understanding. So in one sense, we just have to mature ourselves and to understand that it's Krishna and Krishna's pure devotee. In our case, we have the founder Acharya. So we have a relationship with Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada is our preeminent Shiksha Guru. So his instructions are our protection. So we have to, that's what Sureshwar Prabhu said, therefore we must study deeply Prabhupada's books. And Kevin Prue.
No, thank you. I liked when you were talking about how growing up in the West, our parents like mess us up pretty bad. Like, yeah. I was thinking the same exact thing. Like right as you said that, like I identified with that completely. I was remembering like as a kid being forced to go to a sports camp, and I'm like a musician and an artist. Like even as a little kid, I was like going to art classes and things like. Never interested in this competition and sports and stuff, and it was totally miserable, like the whole thing. Like I was just waiting for it to end, like each day, like I was just like, what is this? Felt like I was in prison or something. And growing up in the West, like summertime would come, being conditioned, being raised into like eating hot dogs in summertime for these different block parties and stuff, like totally messed up, like you were saying. I totally identify with that.
What to speak of, you know, substance abuse, you know, things, intoxication, cigarettes. I remember I started to smoke cigarettes when I was 12 years old. You know, like you see at 12 years old, because I have a, you know, crazy friend in my school who was doing it. And, you know, I have certain relationship with my parents, so I asked my parents, can I smoke? No, you cannot do that! And, you know, my father trained me to actually argue. So, you know, a little argumentative, you know, like, and say, well, you smoke. Yeah, but you cannot. And say, my grandfather smoked. You know, so anyway, so they told me I can, but of course I did, you know, because there's not a good example. So it's all messed up. It's all messed up. And these are good people. What to speak of the abusive one? I mean, there's some horror stories out there. I mean, what's it, what you create is really messed up people.
It was a good point that you were saying too, like following into that, like how Prabhupada said that the children of the movement are Vaikuntha children. Like I remember that, so it's a good point because they're the future of the whole movement. So if they're not groomed the right way, then you know, things could be maybe misordered, you know, out of order later on. So.
Yeah. So we're, you know, most of you are going to be grihastas, the one of you who are single, one of us who are, you know, who are married and things like that, you know, is we have to understand these things very well, very well, and embrace it, follow it, take that responsibility, understand, you know, it's a big service, big time service. Anything else? Yes, back to get Alex Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. How do we give children, especially like pieces or like the essence of the Vedic culture if we're you know, saturated with Western tendencies? I spent the summer working with children in a garden, and I was trying to teach them like simple things, just like mindfulness, but they're so like, it's so much, it was difficult for them to focus. They were so young, and like I know in my generation that, you know, kids developing ADHD and all this, and then seeing the step down, like even younger, I was like, wow, like I felt that some of them were lost. But being in it was a healthy environment for them to be in. Kids aren't really used to, you know, playing in the soil and stuff like that. But like, how do you, if we're not, I guess we have to become fixed first before we can give it. But
yeah, sometimes to do that in outside the devotee community is rough, because the environments in which these children are growing, you know, so working in public schools and things like that. I mean, my wife did some work in public schools, and she would come white. I mean, it was pretty heavy. It was pretty heavy to deal with this kid. I mean, it's like some of them are like delinquents, you know, like literally delinquents, and like there's nothing to be done, you know. So, but with devotees of the community, the children of the community, that's a different story. And in general, kids that are more that lessen the mode of ignorance, a little more passion, a little some goodness, some piety out there too, you know, there's certain kids that the families are a little more pious, a little more in the moral passion. And one of the things that as educators, at least one of the realizations that we have on the many years of working with kids, is that you have to see the child and respect it as an individual. In general, we tend to see the children as, you know, a helpless being that you have to spoon-fed everything. And you have to sort of like, okay, children that are of pious families tend to be very obedient. So you line it up and have them do things according to how you dictate. And they will follow. But it's not their experience, it doesn't come from them. When you actually focus on trying to bring out the child's personal individual experience, the education is focused on that, in tapping onto this individual who brings the wisdom of previous lives, and that is there in a dormant, you know, space. However, as an educator, you're actually trying to create the environment in which that natural understandings and wisdom comes out. And when it comes out from them, they have an individual experiencing of something. So you give the child the choice or the space to actually say something or make a, you know, okay, this is how I understand it.
trying to go deeper into the process of a particular subject matter. And if you give them the space, right, and to tell, this is how it is, memorize it. But you actually give them the space to process it, you know, and guide it, and sort of guide them through that process in which they're actually trying to understand a subject matter. It becomes their experience, and it is something that they, you know, sometimes they become like, they never had that. They never had that, you know, in their education. So she does something that is called Philosophy for Children, that is a methodology that has been developed by scholars, you know, very prominent scholars. And following many parts of the world, and this scholar who developed this methodology to teach philosophy to children as early as 3 years old, as early as 3 years old can have a philosophical discussion. You experience that. You wanna add a little bit of you know, I mean, it's just, you know, doing it with babies, 3 years old, and you can have a philosophical actual discussion with these kids, and you're being blown out by the things that they say.
Since you're responding from the educational standpoint, and the question that was asked was, you know, how you actually are able to educate or at least deal with children often in the present time. I mean, it was pointed out there's like attention deficit disorder and even complete inability to concentrate. And your response was putting the emphasis on, I guess, the one paradigm in teaching. There's two. One is that the teacher's the knowledge holder and the knowledge giver, and the students are the passive recipients. And then the second paradigm is that the students are bringing something to the table too, and that's what you were emphasizing, that a learning environment is created in which the student is an active participant in the learning process. So, and then you asked me to comment a little bit through doing the philosophy for children. The whole method that, you know, I've taken and I've applied in the Krishna conscious setting has been to have the students be the ones who, and it's very much also how Vedic philosophy works. One asks a question and then one is engaged in receiving spiritual knowledge, but one is actively participating in trying to understand. So that's the beginning of the methodology. These children bring the questions based on the particular, usually it's done in story form because it's very easy in this present time to teach philosophy through story. So through story, the children are bring the questions, and then because it's coming from them, that is what they're interested in. And so in these kind of, you know, philosophical discussions, there's an opportunity for the children to make connections with all the other things that they're learning and getting exposed to, and bring it all together. And that's the beauty of you know, Krishna conscious philosophy. It allows for that. So that this creating this kind of setting permits that kind of integration of everything, and it's also it opens up in that kind of group setting, the exploration of topics. I mean, naturally, every Krishna conscious story. It's not any of the transcendental morality, so to speak, or mundane morality is there. It opens up that area, and that's the ultimate training, is to make good judgment. So, and this is what's, I guess, the missing component, being able to assess things correctly from the proper perspective and be able to make proper judgments. So that's the ultimate goal, that the child can actually make proper judgments. So it's a very, nourishing approach, because relationships are developed with peers and strengthened, and also the Krishna conscious stories are permitting the awareness that there's, you know, the moral component in every single decision that one's making. So, yeah, I don't know, I try to cover very broadly as best I could. But yeah, that's the, the finding of meaning on an individual level and on a collective level. So everybody's actually growing and moving together. And on the subtle plane, there's, that learning of empathy for others, and also learning tolerance, because one has to learn to be able to hear very different views and work with it, because one's in a group that's working together. So it's very interesting seeing the development of children using this kind of approach.
Okay. I think we can stop here. Maybe we're in a little over time. Garantara Shriman Bhagavatam Ki Jai.